shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
Oh, we're having a little bit of fun here. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on Phil TV and HD. I found a video on YouTube called Detroit Lion Passers, and it's actually been a lot of fun watching. Whoever put this video together did a great job. They have going all the way back to the days when the Lions were the Portsmouth Spartans.
What was that? That was the name they was before?
Yeah, man, they used to be there.
Yeah, the Lions were way back in the 20s. The NFL had teams like in Portsmouth. They had some small towns. I don't know where Portsmouth is. Where is that?
I can look up on a map if you want.
I think that's where you'd find it, on a map.
Yeah. Durr.
Well, you don't know where it is, man.
I don't know where Portsmouth is. Portsmouth, why is it hard for me to... Anyway, this very interesting video, and now we're into the 80s, and there's some names that I wouldn't know from Adam, and then there's some names you're like, oh, wow, I remember Bob Gagliano, or Bob Gagliano, if you'll pardon the expression. And then and they had Eric Hipple. Here is Rodney Pete. As a matter of fact, Rodney and his lovely wife are friends of mine on Twitter. What do you think of that?
Really?
Yeah. Here's Eric Kramer. Who was the guy before that? I recognize Eric Kramer. Everybody remembers Eric Kramer. There were these flashes of brilliance. Dave Craig. Anybody remember Dave Craig when he was with the Seattle Seahawks? Yes. Scott Mitchell. This is another guy. He went to the Dolphins. There were big hopes for Scott Mitchell. In fact, I remember they talked him up big time. Kent Graham. I don't remember him at all. Oh, yes, I do. But Johnny Johnson, what?
Johnny Johnson, that doesn't... Everybody's got a name like that. Most black guys do.
Shut up, man.
Oh, look at this. Dan... What's that guy's name? Dan Marorski or something? Frank Reich? Frank Reich was with the Buffalo Bills. All these guys had way better careers with other teams. Mac Blunden? Charlie... Look at this. Charlie Batch... That guy is sitting on the bench now behind somebody, I forget who. I think he's in Indianapolis. Jeff Fox. What the hell are these uniforms? Gus Frerotte, remember him? I remember when Gus Frerotte was the answer in Washington. He kicked ass like 1 year in Washington. That was it. Corey Sauter. I don't remember him. Stoney Case, no thank you.
What do you mean, Stoney Case?
I don't. That's the guy's name. I don't remember him. Mike Tomczak, remember him? He's a journeyman. Might still be playing. Scott who? I don't know who that guy is.
The guy's got a Raider uniform on.
If these guys, here's Ty Detmer. Ty Detmer, of course, if these guys were any good, Mike McMahon. I sort of remember Mike McMahon. I remember Jim McMahon, but not Mike McMahon. Ty Detmer. Dave Dickinson. This guy plays in Canada. Oh, I think he's retired now, but he was a big, big name in Canada. Joey Harrington. Remember him? He was another big white hope, you know?
Yeah, I remember that thought. He was a big man.
Rick Meyer. There's another guy. I mean, these guys came along with Detroit, Joey, and Scott Mitchell, they thought was going to kick ass. Jeff Garcia. This is, you know, 05. I mean, Jeff Garcia was on his last legs by that point. Dave Orlovsky. And every one of these pictures shows the guy getting sacked. John Kitna. There's another journeyman. I don't say that in a bad way. I mean, these are the guys that will come in and maybe throw. Josh McCown. All of these guys that were quarterbacks for the Lions leading up, J.T. O'Sullivan. Here's a guy that came out of NFL Europe, J.T. O'Sullivan. Mark Nicolette. God almighty, the Lions have had more quarterbacks over and over. Drew Henson. These are cats that, what did they play, like three downs?
I think a lot of these guys are backups.
Dante Culpepper, did he play for the Lions?
I think so, yeah.
Played two seasons. Drew Stanton. Who's the guy now?
I forget his name.
Me too. I mean, I'm not a Lion fan. Matt Stafford. This is from 2 years ago, 09. Matt Stafford. And I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to get to this. Is that it? Oh, that's the kid now, Matt Stafford.
Yeah, that's the guy, because that's the end of the video on account of they just showed it.
Going, who's Matt Stafford?
That's the guy right now.
Okay, I know that. That's the guy right now. I got it. So I just thought, I thought it was very interesting because... I'm big fan of history. I love sports history, and I like it to be right, just like every other historical thing should be correct. And this guy, whoever put this together, was a very, very in-depth piece on the old, because you were asking, Bud, about what these teams were.
Yeah.
They had teams in the 1920s in the NFL. They had teams in Portsmouth. They had a team in Providence, Rhode Island. They had a team in Canton. They had team. You don't even know, man. Rock Island, something. I don't know what that is, you know. You know.
What's Rock Island? Don't they have no Rock Island team now?
No, they don't have a Rock Island team.
No.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Where are the Packers?
Green Bay, man. That ain't Rock Island.
It's Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Well, what do they get them for?
What do they got what?
Why do they got Green Bay. They don't have no Rock Island.
They for whatever reason, Green Bay hung around. I don't know why. Green Bay just was able to make it work in Green Bay, you know.
What are you talking about? How come the other teams moved?
The other teams moved because they couldn't make any money, because the NFL, there were periods of time where the NFL would contract. That means, in fact, they did contract at the end of the 20s where they shortened the number of teams, okay?
What's that mean?
They got rid of a bunch of teams is what it means. And they only held on to the teams that were financially doing well. And they made some of the teams do financially well by moving them to other cities. And it probably had a lot to do with the relationship the owner had with the league, the relationship the owner had with the other owners, that maybe they let some teams just go to hell in a handcart because they didn't like the guy. Another guy, they said, well, why don't we move this team to Detroit? The Chicago Bears came from Decatur, Illinois. And they were called the Decatur Staleys because I think either the owner or the coach was named Staley.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. That's how they did it in those days. So
the guy's name is like, what if the guy was like a Jew?
Yeah, what about that?
Why don't you guys watch it, okay?
What?
What if the guy was like a Jew? So what if he was?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want, I'm not trying to be like anti-Semite.
Me neither.
Oh, no, not at all. What if he was like a Jew? Okay, so maybe he was. Maybe they had the New York Hirschbergs. Is that what you're saying? I want both of you guys to get out of here.
What?
Get out of here, both of you.
I didn't do anything.
Yes, you did, and you did too, Robert, laughing.
I didn't do what?
Shut up. You too, Robert.
What did I do?
I don't like the way you guys sometimes get on this anti-Jewish thing. You think it's funny?
I'm not anti-Jewish.
I know, but you're encouraging this idiot. Go get me a coffee and then come back in.
Can I too?
I don't know. I'll think about it. The New York Hirschbergs. Anyway, that's what they did in those days. And then the league solidified in the 30s. The National Football League had its very first championship game in the early 30s. And then came World War II, and that was a time of financial problems for the NFL. They had to, I believe, this is the weirdest period for the National Football League was World War II, when they had to take two teams and combine them, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles. Those of you who are NFL historians probably have heard the name Steagles. They were the Steelers and the Eagles. It was they played as one team, and they were trying to save money that way. That was weird, you know, and they had all kinds of things. And then they had the a league came about right after the end of World War II, the All-American Football Conference, that competed against the NFL and didn't, you know, win. So it's a very interesting history. All right, we're going to come back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is, well, you don't need to know the number. We're not giving out the, not taking phone calls just yet. We're going to come back with a couple of stories on this kid, Bradley Manning, with the WikiLeaks thing. I'm just going to read you a couple things from that story that you might find interesting. What's this guy's story? I don't know. And a couple of stories here, one on possible civil disobedience in Detroit. You know, they're going to try and give the state the opportunity to run the city of Detroit because, speaking of Detroit, things are going so bad there, and they want to protest against it. Anyway, we'll figure it out for you. Don't worry. Stick around. World famous Phil Hendry Show. I'll let Bud and Robert come back in, too.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm going to belt you if you bother me, okay? These are the standings, the NFL. These are the old teams right here. You see that, Robert?
Yeah, what was that Muncie Flyer?
The Muncie Flyers, the Columbus Panhandles, they had a bunch of whack teams.
They had no New York Giants, though.
They did not have the New York Giants. They didn't come around until 1921, the New York Giants. The Louisville Brex, the Muncie Flyers.
Look at this. The Tonawanda Kotex.
Why, you dirty...
didn't mean it.
Trying to make a joke, huh?
It was funny, you got to admit.
No, it wasn't funny. Actually, they're not called that. They're called the Cardex. I don't know what that means, and I don't care. All right, so welcome back to the show. 877-876-PHIL is the number we usually give out when we're taking phone calls. We keep giving the phone number out. It is our news and information hour. That's why I am cautioning. Prosecutors say Manning collaborated with WikiLeaks Assange in stealing secret documents. Okay, so military prosecutors. So this kid, Bradley Manning, is some punk kid that was in the Army. He was a specialist of some rank and got a hold of this stuff and started feeding it to this guy, Assange. Did they collaborate? Did Assange know that this was going to happen? Was this something that Assange encouraged? Did he fund it, you know? Military prosecutors presented new and detailed evidence on Thursday that they showed Private Bradley Manning collaborating with Julian Assange, the founder of the anti-secrecy website WikiLeaks, in stealing more than 700,000 documents from classified computer systems and publishing them on the Internet. Assange came under grand jury investigation, possibly for conspiracy, after WikiLeaks publicized secret U.S. documents, roiling U.S. diplomatic relations and turning Manning, for some, into a whistleblowing hero. Manning's defense attorney, David E. Coombs, accused military prosecutors of overcharging in the case in an effort to obtain a plea agreement and gain the former intelligence analyst's cooperation in a separate federal case against Assange. Interesting.
They're going to try and get that guy to help him.
Yes, that's the thinking of this guy, Coombs. Now, this kid, this Bradley Manning, is a former intelligence analyst who obviously he got some kind of clearance that he shouldn't have had.
Why do you say that?
Because if he shouldn't have gotten it. He obviously was not reliable. This guy is not going to keep secrets. This guy compromised the secret classified documents that some people may think he was right in doing, but nonetheless, I don't think the Army wanted it. In just over an hour of closing arguments at a pre-trial hearing, this is what this was, the prosecutors disclosed three new excerpts of chat logs taken from Manning's personal Macintosh laptop. In one, he allegedly asks Assange for help in figuring out a password. In another, he allegedly tells Assange, quote, I'm throwing everything I've got on, end quote. According to Guantanamo detainee reports, at you know, and estimates the upload is about 36%. So he was at Guantanamo, he's been at Guantanamo, but they're quoting him as a Guantanamo detainee, saying, I'm throwing everything I've got on at you know. The upload is about 36%.
What's that mean about, you know?
It means that, you know, wherever they're uploading the stuff, some kind of a server someplace. To which Assange replied, according to the prosecutor, okay, great. I don't know if that represents conspiracy or not. But
What do you got to do to have a conspiracy?
You got to establish that there was a conspiracy, some kind of a pattern, that the two of them were working together. It doesn't mean that you send a letter to somebody and you say, I think I'm going to, you know, rob a bank, and the person sends back a response, that sounds like a great idea. That doesn't necessarily mean that that person should be charged with a conspiracy. There might be something else you could charge them with, but to which Assange replied, okay, great. Behar Azmi, an attorney for Assange with the Center for Constitutional Rights, said the evidence is speculative. We have no access to and cannot review to see the government's evidence. He said, we do not know if it is reliable. We don't have access to and cannot review the government's evidence. That's an explosive thing to say. You're supposed to have access to what the government has. You're supposed to be able to see it. So with that comment, that guy is setting up some doubt in the minds of the public, certainly, that the defense is at a disadvantage, that the prosecutors are not giving them everything that they need.
Well, is that true, or are they just making it up?
I don't know. It might have been true when a guy said it, and maybe the government came over to them about a half hour later and said, by the way, the stuff you want, it took us a while, but we got it. I mean, Thursday's dramatic proceedings brought to a close a seven-day hearing at Fort Meade to determine whether Manning will face a court-martial and under what charges. Coombs seemed to concede that the court-martial will proceed, making no impassioned plea that the charges Manning might face be reduced from 22 to 3. He argued that the maximum sentence should be not the death penalty or life in prison, but a maximum of 30 years behind bars.
What do you mean a death penalty?
Because it could, they could technically charge him with treason. And treason is punishable with death.
What does that mean? What do you mean treason?
Yeah.
Treason is a charge where you are aiding and abetting the country's enemies, especially in wartime, and particularly with people in the military. It's probably very, very hard to charge a civilian or prove it from the standpoint of someone being a civilian, unless the country's at war, and there's a very clear connection between that person and the enemy state. But it's it technically does carry a death penalty. Now, especially for military guys. Now, whether they're going to, it's very unlikely that would happen. This guy is probably looking at, a nice long stretch in prison. I think his attorney, if he's arguing for 30 years behind bars, that's probably what the kid's going to get.
You don't think the guy's going to get life in prison?
I don't think so. Well, I don't know, man. Maybe. I mean, if they knew what they were doing, if the government wanted to really put their foot down, yeah, he would get life. But why do I feel like everything is political now, you know?
I think if the guy really did it, he ought to get the death penalty.
Are you nuts, man? You heard what Phil said.
Well, that's treason to me. And they ought to give him a firing squad or however they do it. How do they do it?
Yeah, how do they do it?
How do they do what?
How's the army do it?
They do firing squad, don't they?
I don't know. No, not firing squad. Well, I don't know. A military guy, maybe. Maybe a firing squad. I don't know. In a 20-minute summation, Combs argued that Manning, now 24, was struggling with a gender identity crisis so severe that, oh, will you give me a break?
What?
A gender identity crisis so severe he was unable to function even before he deployed to Iraq in October 2009. This is an insanity plea. Combs said Manning's superiors repeatedly failed to act on signs of his distress. So because he had a gender identity crisis, he was giving away secrets to the...
Guy didn't know whether he was a man or a woman, so he decided to just start spilling secrets out to terrorism and everything.
Yeah, he decided to be a traitor. Like, that's better than being a man or a chick.
Yeah, is that a gender? You know?
I don't know, you guys. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. But anyway, I shouldn't judge. We should never judge. We don't know. Walk a mile in a man's shoes. That's what they always say. You know?
I didn't know that.
Don't make any jokes, bud. I can see you smiling. I'll kick your butt again. He argued that WikiLeaks' posting of more than 250,000 diplomatic cables and voluminous databases of Iraq and Afghanistan military field reports has not caused harm to the United States, and that the government's claim that there has been extreme harm is an overreaction. The sky has not fallen, the sky is not falling, and the sky will not fall, said Mr. Combs. These are all arguments that are irrelevant. The question is, did this man commit this act? Is it an illegal act? And if so, then what should the punishment be? And he did. He did. He disclosed these classified documents. It violated his the code of conduct that this man is supposed to, and his oath to the military that he's supposed to live his life by and operate under. He did all of these things.
Yeah, but what if he was confused about being a guy?
Man, that got nothing to do with it. You know, I'm not going to do anything to do with it.
I don't know, but he said he had a gender identity. He had a gender confusion.
Yeah, all right, so he had a gender confusion. I agree with Robert. So, are they going to establish something if they bring a psychiatrist in? And the guy says, I mean, to me, this is the first time I've heard of this, but then, you know, maybe I'm not that well informed, but they bring a psychiatrist in, the guy says, the guy had a gender identity crisis. Okay, what are the symptoms of that? Unreliability, okay, but does that also mean that you go and you select documents with the aid or without of another individual and begin to feed them? Doesn't that take a little bit of thinking?
You could be worried that you're a girl and be looking for, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the key line there, bud. You don't know. You're worried you're a girl.
Ain't he worried about it?
I don't know if he's worried about it. If he's got a gender identity crisis issue, he must think that he's a female. I don't know. You guys are asking me all the wrong questions. In a March 8, 2010 chat, Manning asked Assange for help in cracking a password so he could log onto the classified computer anonymously. That doesn't sound like a guy that's having emotional problems. That sounds like a guy that knows exactly what he's doing.
You mean a chick?
Yeah, that sounds like a he-she that doesn't know, you know, that's fine. Any good at IM hash cracking, Manning asks. Yes is the reply. We have rainbow tables for IM. citing a tool that can be used to decipher passwords. Manning sent a string of numbers. Password is on to our guys is the reply. Oh, passed it on to our guys is the reply. So there you have it. These two douchebags, whether this guy thinks he's a woman or not, whether Assange is playing around with women, mainly underage or not, is probably beside the point. We know what they did. Now it's, does the guy get life, death, or 30 years? I say...
death!
No, I didn't say that, but you did.
Phil Hendry.
I'd say... Yeah?
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our news and information hour. Very nice to be with you. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with us. We're online at philhendryshow.com. You can go over there and get a backstage pass. Look at our live streaming video of the show right now. And you can also check us out. You can check us out on weekends. We do our video cast on weekends from our, just doing our local show here in the Los Angeles area. We do one show a week. But most of our shows are done for y'all. Yeah, I just said y'all, and it didn't sound too lame.
Yeah, you must have lived down south or something.
I did, as a matter of fact. I lived in the south for a good part of the 70s, as a matter of fact. And when I returned to California in 79, 78, I did have a bit of a y'all thing going on. People would look at me like, what's y'all? And, you know, I didn't know that I'd adopted that. But now, you notice it's everywhere, right?
Yeah, man, I mean, y'all, everybody says it.
They say y'all or they say yo if you're black.
What are you talking about, man?
Look, don't start in, bud, okay?
No, that's what yo is.
No, man, yo ain't y'all if you're black. Yo is yo. You understand?
All right, well, the point being, God, bud, man, every time something's racial with you.
That's what I thought.
All right, well, you're wrong. The point is, y'all is just taking on national... is taken on national character, or the character of some people's speech has taken on y'all. So it's become very much an Americanism. And, of course, when it becomes an Americanism, it becomes a, you know, internationalism, and everybody's using it. So that's where that's at. And I think a lot of that has to do with Facebook, Twitter, and all that stuff. All these things get... although I have to tell you, yo, man, where I see yo used, it just grates on me. Forgive me, but... It just does, you know.
Like what?
I don't know. I shouldn't say. But I think that there is some line to be drawn there. I think if you're,
you're going to say white, aren't you?
Certain white people shouldn't say yo.
Like who, man? I bet you're going to say Canadians.
I didn't. Canadians?
Isn't that what you're going to say?
No. You're right, man. No Canadian should say yo.
Oh,
that's funny. I don't know why that's funny, but it's funny.
You gotta make a law out of it.
You can make a law. No, you know, you guys can say yo. If you're white, you say it, but if you're Canadian, forget it. Oh, my God. All right. I don't know.
Who do you think I was saying it?
I don't know, bud. Quit. You guys are cracking me up. I don't know, man. I just see it all over the, you know, yo, yo, this, yo, that, yo, 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 yo. Poor Canada, man. My people come from Canada. How come we're always dumping on Canada?
Yeah, because you think they're all a bunch of liberals.
Oh, I don't know, you know. Don't think about Canada, man. You know, my family comes from there, like I said, and, I was raised by Canadians that were very different. They were ass-kicking, hard-ass, hard-charging Canadians. You know, they were like World War II Canadians. They were like, you know, hit-the-beaches Canadians. You know, they were, you know, some people would probably argue that they were too friendly to America kind of Canadians. But what the hell's, what's wrong with that? I mean, what kick are you getting out of being like against it? You know, if you're Canadian and you got a hard-on, excuse my French, for America... What are you getting out of that, man? Other than just to say we don't like America, why? You know, give me a good reason. You know, don't give me a bullcrap reason. Don't give me some silly ass you know, made up, concocted thing because you need to have, you just need to be anti-American because it gives you more national identity, you know? I don't think, you know, and I've said this, and this sounds probably heartless of me. While I love Canada, and I love, and there are Canadians that I love, obviously, my family member and other people, you know, I don't know that it's a really healthy thing to have a national identity that you forge out of disliking or being the opposite of somebody. In other words, you have to say, who are you? You know?
Well, like, as opposed to what?
Well, as opposed to saying who you're not. So if you're Canadians and you say, well, we don't do this, we don't do that, we don't do everything that America does, we don't do that, 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 okay, fine. That still doesn't tell me who you are. And I think it's not, I don't think it's healthy, you know, to say we're not this, we're not that, we're not something else. When I was up there last summer, I'm reading articles in the paper up there about how Canadians don't stay home. They leave. They leave the country. They live in Europe. They live in the States. They live in around the world. My own nephew, Craig, you know, he was, and, you know, God bless the kid. Good for him. He was teaching English in Korea. He went to work in Australia. He worked in Southeast Asia. He was, he's done a lot of different things, as did his brother. And this is a noble thing, but it was something they pointed out in the paper saying, where are all of our people? You know, where are our young people, especially? Everybody splits and then comes back here, maybe never, maybe sometimes, maybe yes, maybe no, you know. And that's, you know, something to be said. Now, you know, Canada is a, it's a tough place to live in terms of weather. I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't do it. I'm telling you right now. There's probably not a whole hell of a lot of difference between that and Montana, but there's a reason why most of the Canadian population lives right at the border, the southernmost part of the country. You know?
Yeah, but you're talking about all white people. All like Indian people.
No, the black people live down there too. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about them Indian, man. I'm talking about Native, like, what do you call
them? Eskimos and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean?
Don't try to twist around what I'm saying, man. I'm saying that the Native people live up in, like, North Pole and all that.
Yeah, but where, aren't they the same as black people?
Oh, will you shut up, bud?
What?
What a stupid thing to say. Aren't they the same as black people? Black folks got to Canada a whole other way. Besides,
got them an Underground Railroad.
What's that?
That was the freedom train that they carried slaves that were escaping the South, and they went all the way through, in some instances, the United States and went to Canada to escape all this bullcrap. Another proud chapter. Anyway, you know, I don't know why I'm wasting all this time talking about this stuff, but I just thought it was interesting. However, as I said to you guys, when I went back there last summer, and I was in that part of Toronto where the Hendry family, you know, comes from. I mean, the founding, you know, people of my family are from the beaches of Toronto. And I looked at that neighborhood. I said, now, this is a really cool neighborhood. I really liked it.
What would it have?
Well, it's like any really cool gentrified old neighborhood in a city where, like North Beach in San Francisco, you know, and it had all the original houses, but they'd been refurbished. They look gorgeous, you know, and they have bistros and little restaurants and coffee shops on the main drag there, Queen Street, and then down you have the lake, and they've got the old lake yacht club. It's not really a yacht club. It's like a rowing club they have down there.
What do you mean rowing?
That's what they do. They row, man. You know, they row, and they got little tiny sailboats.
But they call it a rowing club?
It's called a rowing club, yeah. They got all these boats, and these cats get out there and row, man, and they have these competitions. Anyway, it's a lake. You know, it's a big-ass lake, but it's still a lake. So I really dug it. I thought it was a beautiful part of town, and, I would love... I've been so many places where I'd like to have a home. I'd like to say I would love to have an apartment here. I'd love to have an apartment there.
But you want to have an apartment, like, in New York and everything.
I'd like to have an apartment in New York, in London, and in Toronto.
What about San Francisco?
No, I can go to San Francisco any day I want. I can drive up there tomorrow if I want to, you know?
No, you can't. You got to work tomorrow night.
Well, you get it. You know what I'm talking about. The earthquake-damaged Washington Monument has extensive cracking and chipped stones near its peak that make it highly vulnerable to rainfall, and inspectors found cracks and loose stones along the entire length of the 555-foot structure, according to a report released by the National Park Service. So that's something else we need to pay for. I'm very happy to do it, though. This is one citizen. I'm very happy to repair our national monuments, but that's what's happened to the old Washington Monument. It's got cracks from that earthquake. You remember that one in Virginia? The report was prepared by the engineering firm whose employees rappelled down the sides of the monument in September to inspect the damage. It offers the most detailed portrait yet of damage to the 127-year-old monument, which has been closed to visitors since a 5.8-magnitude earthquake shook the nation's capital on August the 23rd. Now, it was built originally in 1848. Now, that was 12 years before the Civil War started. The construction of the Washington Monument was interrupted by the Civil War and was concluded in 1880. Where was it? It was concluded in 1884. So if you take away the 12 years, that's, 26, take away 12, so that's 14 years it took to build the Washington Monument.
That's because it took long to build stuff back in them days, you know.
What?
Like the monument. Like, look how long it took to build the pyramids.
That ain't the pyramids, man. The pyramids are 1,000 years old. The pyramids? The pyramids took, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but they had to have, when they built stuff, they got to have slaves do it and everything. Probably got slaves to come up from the cotton fields.
Man, I'm going to kick some ass.
What are you talking about? That's true.
No, it isn't. Well, maybe it was true to an extent in 1848. Yeah. I have to say it's probably true, Robert. They probably did have slaves working on it, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's talking about bringing them all up from a cotton field.
Well, I mean, Washington, D.C. was was right on the border of Virginia. They probably did bring slaves in. I don't know. Maybe they didn't. It was a free city. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it was, if black people came to work on the Washington Monument, this thing called being a freedman, and the law said that if you were a black man on free soil, then you were free. But that was the Dred Scott case, and I don't want to go into that right now. All right. So anyway,
what about the monument and everything?
Right. So anyway,
you want to talk about the slaves?
No, I don't. Shut up before I belt you. I don't want to get into a whole thing about how the pyramids are different from the freaking. Are you nuts or something?
Yeah, but that's the way they did it.
Back then they did, not in 1848, man. They didn't. What do you think, man? They had a cat with a whip, you know?
You said they had slaves.
I'm beginning to wonder if they had slaves that built that stuff anyway. I don't think they did. Washington, D.C., I don't think was a slave municipality. I think there were slave and free states. Just shut up, bud. The recommended repairs include reinforcing the cracks with stainless steel plates and filling them with sealant, replacing as many loose pieces of marble as possible, and shoring them up with steel anchors or mortar. So it's going to be expensive. We have to repair it, and that's just all there is to it. Man, we're not going to let our national monuments go to hell in a handbasket. This American doesn't want to see it happen. So construction began on the monument in 1848, and after an interruption during the Civil War, it was completed in 1884. It remains the tallest structure in Washington. And get a load of this. It was the world's tallest man-made structure until it was eclipsed by Paris's Eiffel Tower in 1889.
Wow.
So one more little thing, we got to fix. What are you going to do? You going to not fix it? I mean, the guy made a good point. He made a very good point. You know, we talk about, you know, oh, there's too much spending. Yeah, you're right. There is too much spending. So where do you want to stop spending? Now, we have wars to prosecute. We've got a military. Do you want to stop there? Well, people will say no, because you can't leave our fighting men and women shorthanded. We have to conclude those wars. Oh, okay. We've got to conclude. All right. So that's one area that we're going to have to keep, you know, spending money on. Okay. Now that means something else. What about the Chinese are out here in the Pacific? They're rattling their sabers. Do we want to continue to build our Pacific fleet or maintain it? Well, we don't have enough money for that, but President Obama just said that America will not be second to anybody in the Pacific. That's going to cost money. Okay, fine. Now, repairing the Washington Monument, some people, this is the very thing that people on other projects would say we're nickel and dime, nickel and dime, nickel and dime. Why spend money on the Washington Monument? Because that's our national, that's a national symbol. Well, I mean, it's costing money. Why do we have to spend it on that? Why don't you get a private company to do that? Why don't we raise donations? Why don't we, you know? Everything costs. Everything costs. Everything. Everything. And that's why people say entitlements is where it's going to have to come from. Social Security, Medicare, All of that stuff, it's got to come from there. And you can't cut the military budget enough. You can't. There's nothing else to cut, man. You're not going to be able to cut it enough. So.
Good thing I ain't going to worry about it.
No, you don't have to worry about it.
You do, though.
I ain't worried. I mean, if you think I'm going to live on my Social Security, you high on drugs? Are you nuts? I get my Social Security back. They can have mine. I can't live on that for 4 days. Who can? You got to supplement it with something else, obviously, but I'm not even, no, I've got expensive tastes. No way.
Yeah, Social Security, you can't, like, go to Disneyland or anything?
I got way more expensive tastes. No. All right, we'll be back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show with our final segment containing God knows more of the same on the Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Can you? No.
The Phil Henry Show.
Go to Disneyland on Social Security money.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Now, that's very interesting, bud. And you agree with what Dan just said?
Yeah.
Dan said that I was in Canada, that if I bought peyote, because I think Canada, it's legal to buy peyote seeds, it's legal to buy certain seeds, marijuana seeds.
Yeah, well, they got like a ad in some of them weed paper. What'd they say, bud?
You can buy certain seeds, but they won't mail it down to America, so forget it.
No, I know that. I know that. If you're talking about mail order.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to mail order some seeds to the states. You can't do it because the Canadians won't mail them to an American address. But what I'm talking about is if you're in Canada and you go to one of these head shops, I don't know what they have up there, man, because I didn't go, you know, but, and you are, and you buy some peyote seeds, okay, not marijuana. And you got them in your bags. Now I come back into the States.
Yeah.
And I get stopped by customs. They look and they find the peyote seeds. You're telling me that they wouldn't arrest me?
No. They'd probably fine you.
They'd fine you and they'd confiscate it. And then they'd probably, the L.A. Times would do an article.
The L.A. Times would do an article about what?
About you getting arrested.
I thought you just said I wasn't going to get arrested.
They probably would arrest you.
For bringing peyote seeds that I legally bought in Canada, right?
Well, they don't care, man. They'd arrest you. And then they you know.
Yeah, they do like a magazine article on a Sunday New LA Times or whatever.
The New LA Times. You mean the New York Times?
Or whatever, yeah.
Are you out of your mind? Yeah, sure. Phil Henry arrested with peyote seeds that he legally bought in Canada. Get out of here.
I'm telling you, man.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not doing it. The reason why I brought it up is because I was asked by somebody. I said, well, no, I don't want to do it. Then I asked when I was up there, I asked my nephew, and we were having dinner one night. He says, yeah, right down the street. He pointed right down the street where you could buy it. But you know what? I doubt that seriously. I really do, you know.
You asked him if it's peyote?
I think I did. I think I asked him something. He said, yeah, right down the street. But I'm, you know, the point is not worth it. I'm not going to do it. But the reason why I'm not going to do it isn't because I'm afraid they're going to write an article about me in the New York Times. Are you crazy? I don't want to get popped. It's as simple as that. I don't need a police record. All right. A reminder that we're online at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Tomorrow night at midnight, you will be hearing here on The Phil Henry Show. And if you have a backstage pass, you will be watching on our videocast as we perform Phil Henry's Christmas Carol. And Bud, you better get ready for this one.
Yeah, I'm the star.
You're not the star.
He's got the role of Ebenezer Dickman. And
yeah, who do you think the main guy is?
Yeah, but you're not the star. He is.
All right, he's Ebenezer Dickman. Whatever.
You don't play nothing.
Yeah, I do. I play a guy at the end.
Yes, he does. He has a very significant part. He's the guy at the end who, you know, gets the... I forget what you do, Robert. We'll look it over. All right, so that's tomorrow night at midnight, Phil Henry's Christmas Carol. It'll be, as I say, here on the radio show, and it'll be live on our videocast, and it starts at midnight Pacific time. Midnight Pacific time. So as you know, our show starts at 10 on the West Coast here in the El Pacifico at 1 o'clock on the East Coast. So it'll be around 3 a.m. on the East Coast for the Christmas Carol. And then we're going to, you know, probably take the week between Christmas and New Year's off. We'll be back with you guys. We've got a lot of stuff happening on the website this coming year. I also want to remind you that while it is too late to have it delivered by Christmas, you can sure as heck go into the Phil Henry merchandise shop there on our website and pick up some stuff for the Phil Henry fan in your house, which may just happen to be you since you're listening to the show right now. And you know, maybe present it to him a little bit after Christmas or whatever. It's never too late. So hit up the shop. A lot of people going for the Teds of Beverly Hills hoodies. We've got our hats. We've got our T-shirts. We've got our downloadable Best of Phil Henry now. So you can go over to the website. You don't have to buy the physical CD. You can download all of the CDs, all of them, all of our legacy CDs. And there'll be more to come in the coming year. Phil Henry Show is produced by me, Phil Henry, and Dan Northcraft, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard. And from all of us here at the world-famous Phil Henry Show, have a very pleasant day. We'll see you tonight. And at midnight, of course, the Phil Henry Christmas Carol.
Phil Henry.